Mystery Theater. This week from Vancouver, Double Strip by Otto Lowy.
I don't believe it. I beg your pardon. Sorry, sir.
Oh, well, I suppose I mustn't blame you, Gray. On the other hand, every country now and again did.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, sir.
Oh, well, I suppose I mustn't blame you, Gray. On the other hand, every country now and again provides its own traitors.
On a certain level, sir, yes. It's one thing for a British scientist to spy on behalf of another power, but it's quite another kettle of fish to be a courier. Spies are a part of every country's military tradition. Couriers, on the other hand, are like gunrunners or white slave traders. We ought to leave that to foreigners.
Oh, dear. You and I, Gray, have worked together for a good many years now. I've always known you as a first-class agent. But I've just begun to realize that you're also a snob. Still, as long as it doesn't interfere with your work...
Sorry, sir.
Well, then, now that I know your feelings about couriers, I hope you don't mind an assignment which will bring you in rather close contact with one.
British, sir?
Really, Gray? Even you must realize that the day of the British Raj is past... Besides, you must try to accept the fact that there's always been a certain amount of cheating going on the playing fields of Eton. I know. I was there. You, Gray, I'm afraid, are betraying an entirely new facet of your personality. I don't like it personally, but that has nothing to do with our job.
But it has, sir.
What's the matter with you, Gray? You've never talked to me like this before. You haven't started to drink again, have you, old chap?
Only in the line of duty, sir.
Well, that's somewhat reassuring, at least.
It's only that I've done some research on our friend here, and I thought I'd try the old-school type it on you, sir. Successfully, it seems, though unlike yours, my playing fields as a boy were bordered on one side by the walls of Pentonville Prison, and on the other by the high fence of the gasworks. A busy high street ran between these two landmarks, and so passing trams tended to interfere with our games of cricket.
So you've been using me as your guinea pig the last few minutes, have you?
I'm afraid so, sir.
Well, Gray, if familiarity breeds contempt, then you're certainly getting familiar.
But hardly contemptuous, sir.
For that kind of remark, Gray, you would have been drummed out of our service 50 years ago.
Times have changed, sir. After all, they do call us swinging Britain abroad.
Gray, if you continue this, I promise that it will be you who'll swing.
Yes, sir.
By the way, Gray, if you don't mind, how did you manage to leave, the particular district you were brought up in?
It's all in my personal record, sir. But it seemed to be the rule in countries where the system was based on keeping the social classes as far apart as possible... that a poor but talented boy had a better chance of getting ahead in life than his counterpart in a more egalitarian society. A system of scholarships, as well as the patronage of some kind well-wishers from the ranks of the upper classes, helped. It is useless and idle speculation to examine the motives of those kind people now.
All these years and I never... never mind that now. Tell me about your research into this case.
Well, when I received the file on him, I immediately made some inquiries. Got in touch with a fellow who resigned from my club because he defaulted on his wagering debts. He knows the chap well. Racing type, good school, excellent regiment. And after the last war, director of several importing companies. 1948 member of a trade mission to Moscow, though in a very junior capacity. Well-liked, particularly by the jet set and...
The what?
The jet set, sir. The fast crowd, sir. Rich enough to get quickly from one place to another, but too poor to own the aircraft itself. American industrialists, British lords, a couple of French starlets.
I see. Now go on.
An all-round gentleman, in other words, trusted implicitly by everybody.
Including our own service. We've had a couple of warnings, and we've made a couple of investigations. But it seems that anybody with his collar necktie is untouchable.
The attitude of the British Raj, as you so succinctly put it a few minutes ago, sir?
Gray. If I hadn't known and worked with you for 30 years, I'd swear they'd just recruited you right off Carnaby Street.
Thank you, sir. If you allow me, I'll consider that as a compliment.
Enough of these pleasantries, Gray. Have you ever lived in Scotland, Gray?
As a matter of fact, I spent most of my school holidays on the peat farm belonging to very distant relatives of mine. Still go there, shooting pheasant once in a while.
Good. I take it your Scottish brogue is fairly authentic.
Right, sir. Impeccable. Would you prefer Highland or Lowland speech, or perhaps the accents of the Outer Hebrides?
Splendid, Gray.
I think you could have fooled Harry Lauder himself. Thank you. You want me to go to Scotland, sir?
I want you to go to Yugoslavia.
That's why you inquire as to my proficiency in Gaelic.
I am a patient man, Gray.
I'm all ears, sir. I'm all ears, I promise.
All right. Now then. Belgrade, Yugoslavia, is the site of the World Publishers Congress next week. It's an international organization consisting of individual commercial enterprises from all over the world. The eastern states, I mean the politically eastern states, are represented also. Not, of course, by private firms, but by their respective state publishing houses. It's a big bash, a very big bash. Conferences, committees, subcommittees, cocktail parties, sightseeing tours, the lot. It's scheduled to last a week, and you're going.
I see. Representing the Glasgow Book of Authentic Tartans Publishing Company.
No. Representing the Red Lion publishers of copies of authentic ancient maritime charts.
Of what?
Ancient maritime charts. Lucrative business, catering mostly to American tourists who wish to decorate the paneled walls of their dens and playrooms. An esoteric business, I grant you, but an excellent cover for your mission in Belgrade.
Any disguise?
No. No disguise.
Good. Considering the nautical side of the business, I thought you'd wish me to resemble the sailor on a package of Claire's cigarettes.
No, Gray. No. All I want you to do is to go to Perth for a week, surround yourself with nothing but Scotsmen, study the art and history of ancient maritime chart-making, and lay off the Scotch.
But, sir, I ought to be an expert on...
You are, Gray, you are. You are the only one of my agents who can tell the difference between a bottle of Bonnie Prince Charlie, 1892, and a bottle of Brown Heather, vintage, 1901. I assure you, my dear Gray, your credentials in that respect have been established with this department over the years. There's no need for further research.
All right, sir. Nothing but young Scotsmen and ancient charts. I promise you, sir.
After a week among the Scottish chartmakers, you're to return to London, where you'll get in touch with your fellow British delegate to the Congress in Belgrade.
Also an ancient chartmaker, I suppose.
No. But he is, in a way, in a related field. Navigable canals of Great Britain. Contemporary road maps. In other words, the tourist end of publishing. There's lots of foreigners going in and out of his office in Holborn.
His own firm?
No. Just a department in a huge firm publishing strictly geographical material. But he is the head of it, and very active in the organization of world publishers. As a matter of fact, he's on their international executive.
This organization...
Oh, it's clean. Absolutely clean. The organization, I mean. As far as certain individual members of it are concerned, well, that's another story. All this information was not contained in your file on him. Anyway... You're going to meet our friend here in London. You're going to have a drink together, and you're going to discuss any strategy and plans you might, as British delegates, present to the Congress. He will no doubt be very conscientious about representing British publishing interests abroad. I expect you to match his seriousness and enthusiasm. The next day, you will fly together to Belgrade. You're not to leave his side for a moment. We know that he's carrying a message to Yugoslavia, which he'll try to pass on to somebody there. But we don't know what the message is or to whom it is to be passed. It could be anybody. It could be another delegate. It could be... I don't know. Anybody. It'll be your job to prevent him from passing on that message. That's all I can give you. You'll have to play it by ear. You have only 1 week, Gray. Only 1 week.
Big black limousine slid out of the airport. I was in the back, next to my fellow British delegate, George Boone. Matter of fact, I was sitting next to him on the bus to the London airport, on the plane to Belgrade, and it looked as if I was going to sit next to him for many days to come. Opposite us, on the jump seat, sat a Canadian delegate.
Haven't had a chance to introduce myself. Ken Roberts, Canada.
How do you do? John Gray, Great Britain. And my colleague, George Boone.
Hi. Delighted. Hey, just a minute. One of you guys is Scottish, right?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't hold it against him, old man.
Hmm?
Nice fella. Loyal to Queen and country. Hasn't left my side since we met in London, have you, old chap?
Not much experience in these foreign junkets, George. Sort of feel safe if I stick close to you. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, not at all, Gray, not at all. Glad to be of help. You just hold on to me. Besides, it looks good. Gives the British delegation a nice image of togetherness, eh, Roberts?
Yeah, sure. Listen, anything I can do, you just let me know. Spent my honeymoon over here a few years ago, so I know a bit about the country. Even remember a few words here and there. Hey, boy, wait till you see the hotel. Hey, looks as if we've arrived.
Yep, there it is. Hotel Metropole.
Metropole Hotel was a perfect example of neo-Stalinist architecture. A relic of the cult of personality. A huge white wedding cake. Turrets everywhere. Inside, spacious halls, shiny marble floors, polished granite columns, and every inch of the walls covered with immense mirrors. A thousand surfaces threw back the lights, distorted and multiplied each image a thousand times.
Wow.
Finally, Gray. Now I'm here, now I ain't.
Aye, yes, George. And it's all done with mirrors.
The elevator did not work. Two old ladies carried our bags to the fifth floor. They fought like tigresses for possession when we tried to take the bags up ourselves. George and I had to join rooms. I had to let him go then. Roberts had a room on the same floor.
See you later, fellas.
Yes, I'm rather tired, Roberts. Think I'll turn in now. Good night, Roberts.
Good night.
Good night, old man.
Good night.
There was nothing left but to go to bed. We'd had a busy day and a whole week ahead of us. I unlocked my room and closed the door behind me. In the corner, hard against Broom's wall, I stuck a suction cup carrying an electronic device which would record any sound caused by the opening and closing of Broom's door. I took my shoes off and lay on the bed. I was resigned to sleeping with my pants on for the rest of the week. I was tired. Very tired. Suddenly, I heard it. The device was working. Somebody was slowly opening the door of Broom's room. Only I didn't know if it was from the outside or the inside. I slipped into my shoes and opened the door.
You're going somewhere, Broom?
As a matter of fact, I am, Gray. Couldn't sleep, I'm afraid. Hard beds, as well as the viewer of a first night in a strange hotel in an exotic European country. You know the stuff. Besides, it'll be all work from tomorrow on. Eh, what?
it will, sure.
I know. All work and no play makes Jack. But there's always tomorrow. Care to join me tonight?
That's a fine idea. Thanks.
You know, Gray, I had a feeling you would. How about the Metropole Bar?
Sounds good.
And, Gray, don't do anything until you see the whites of their eyes, will you, old chap?
The bar of the Metropole Hotel. A place full of tradition, excitement, mystery. A place with a reputation like the Orient Express. Always there like the Express, serving all masters, all governments, all regimes. Most dangerous at night, when the noise of the bar band or the noise of the train engine drowns out revolver shots or the cry of the stand. Like the Express, staffed by employees in the pay of kings, kaisers, or commissars.
How about over there? That booth gives us a good view of the floor.
Aye, and of the bar.
Right. I see you've got a good eye for them yourself, Gray.
They were sitting on the edge of their high bar stools like clay pigeons, ready to take off at the report of a hotel key dropped on the glass top bar. They all seemed to be sheathed in long, shiny satin. Perched as they were on high chrome stools, revealing long, white curves of long, white legs through narrow slits in black or red gowns, they looked good. Very good. Six seemingly fluorescent shapes in the dark. We sat down in a small alcove, heavily draped in wine-red velvet, fringed with tiny gold pom-poms. Broom ordered champagne.
Might as well celebrate in style.
What are we celebrating?
Freedom.
Freedom?
You know, getting away from the old desk, getting away from the old woman. just getting away. Come on, Gray. You're not going to be all business, are you? Plenty of time for that tomorrow, eh?
The waiter brought the champagne in an ice bucket. The longest pair of legs in the blackest, tightest dress of them all detached itself from the bar stool.
Oh. Oh, never knew the potency of this Bulgarian bubbly, eh, Gray? Oh, dear.
I'm afraid I was directly in your line of fire.
I was still wiping the champagne off my lapels when I heard the voice. I looked up. There was more to her than a pair of shimmering legs. Much more. And the dark brown hair cascaded heavily on white shoulders. I thought, if I had the choice, I'd call her Ninotchka.
My name is Velasta.
Broom. George Broom. And this is my colleague, John Gray.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I say, I'm frightfully sorry about your dress. I had no idea the champagne had gone out of hand like that. Here, let me have...
Oh, perfectly all right, Mr. Broom, isn't it? It will dry in no time.
Well, there must be something I can do to make up. I say, would you like to join us in a drink, Miss...
Velasta. Just Velasta.
Velasta. Sounds lovely. Would you, Velasta?
With pleasure.
Just said to Gray here, got to celebrate tonight, didn't I, Gray? Well, let's all sit down, shall we?
Your first time here in Belgrade, gentlemen?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. Lovely city and all that.
Staying at the Metropole?
Yes.
Well, then you're in luck. Tonight, the Metropole Bar presents the first and only performance of a great Romanian artist.
You sound like a representative of the Ministry of Culture.
Hardly.
What is she then? A folk singer?
No. A lady stripteaser.
Well, look who's here.
Hey, I thought you guys said you were tired.
Miss Velasta, this is a colleague of ours, Mr. Roberts from Canada.
How nice.
All right. This seat taken?
Oh, don't be such a clock, Roberts, and sit down.
Oh, gee, thanks. Couldn't sleep, so I thought I'd come down here and have a drink. Didn't know I'd end up drinking champagne.
Velasta, the program tonight.
You're a naughty man, Mr. Broom. I think you want to ask me about the lady stripteaser.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was. You know, on a trip like this, you've got to try and learn as much as you can. Cultural assets and all that sort of thing.
If you're talking about that broad on the picture outside, she's got assets, all right. Not sure I'd call them cultural, but she's got assets, all right.
Well, really, Roberts.
Yeah, what did I do now?
There's also a very good mind reader.
Well, I'm going to beat it if he performs at the same time as the broad.
A ventriloquist and two jugglers.
Well, whatever it is, she looks like a hard act to follow.
You're right, in a way, Mr. Roberts. Hers is a novelty act.
Novelty act?
Yes. You see, Mr. Broom, unlike most ladies in her profession, she requires an assistant in her act.
I see.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, where do you have to apply for the job?
So don't be surprised, Mr. Broom. You just might find yourself on that stage tonight.
Well, I really didn't expect to.
You did say you were celebrating tonight, didn't you, Mr. Broom?
Say, that's pretty good, eh?
One of the best juggling acts in Europe, Mr. Robin.
Well, I'm not surprised. Hey, what's happening to the lights?
Watch.
Jolly good.
As long as nobody gets burned.
They know how to handle those flaming torches.
Well, that was pretty hot stuff. Hey, did you get that?
Hot stuff.
All right. We get it, Roberts.
Boy, this is a great place, eh?
I think the star turn is about to appear.
You have a good ear for music, Mr. Gray.
Thank you very much.
The lights began to fade all around us. Only three orange muted spotlights lovingly caressed a beautiful girl who stood perfectly still in the middle of the dance floor. Flimsy bits of silk were draped around her body, and as she was billed as Salome, I assumed the silk squares represented the seven veils. The first three came off in rather a hurry.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter, Mr. Roberts?
Well, that's going a bit too fast for my money. I mean, what is this? Is she supposed to fulfill some state striptease norm or something?
Is that more to your taste, Mr. Roberts?
Boy, Boy, oh boy.
Robert's admiration was justified. Salome was an expert. Dale number four fell to the floor.
Four down, three to go.
Salome began to move. She walked to the edge of the dance floor. She lowered veil number five. Number five was draped over her face. A pair of dark brown eyes began scanning the audience. She started to walk again. Everything was very still, except for the music. Once in a while, the eyes rested on an upturned male face, and one could almost hear the intake of the man's breath. Who'd be the lucky one?
Oh, Russian roulette has nothing on this.
I didn't promise too much, did I, Mr. Bloom?
I see what you mean.
Holy jeez, this is driving me nuts, Gray.
Take it easy, Roberts.
Hey, she's coming closer. And closer.
Very fast. Bloom was missing from his chair when Roberts, hair flying, his eyes as mad as a horse gone wild, leapt to his feet. In the rush, he overturned his chair, knocking Bloom into Blaster's lap. Two jumps took Roberts to the edge of the dance floor. Quickly, but very gracefully, he swept his surprised partner into his arms and gracefully danced across the floor. They came to a standstill in the opposite corner, diagonal from us. They were now out of earshot. An overhead spark lit up Salome's face. She smiled and nodded her head. I couldn't believe my eyes. Robert smiled as if he'd found a long-lost lover and also nodded his head. He seemed to be in a trance. Now Salome stepped back. She slowly lifted her two slim arms above her head, and veil number six floated like a wounded butterfly to the floor. There was only one more veil separating Robert from Salome. All eyes were now on that unlikely pair. With the sweetest of smiles, Salome touched the hem of the seventh veil. Suddenly, all the lights went out. It was pitch dark. But imprinted on my retina were the outlines of Salome's white body. The lights slowly began to come up again. There, in the middle of the floor, stood Salome. Her hands strategically placed, demurely acknowledging the applause. The seventh veil was gone, and so was Roberts. I was still on my feet. I turned around. Blaster was gone. I looked across the bar. In the row of girls, there was a gap like a missing tooth. Blaster was gone. Only Bloom was still at the table. With glazed eyes, he looked as if he didn't know what had hit him.
Enjoy the show, George. Time to go berry by his age, George. You've had a very busy day, and it looks like a busy week ahead for all of us.
All that's left for you to do now, Gray, is to forget your Scottish brogue. Frankly, it's beginning to get on my nerves.
Very well, sir.
I'm sorry, sir. It was a good show anyway, Gray. Not much for you to do, but it was a good show.
Did you know about Roberts when I went out there?
Of course. I thought it better to leave you in the dark about that one. We knew too little about the whole operation anyway, and we thought if you operated independently from each other, your chances might be better all round.
Why Roberts?
You mean why a Canadian? Broom went out to Montreal to Expo 67 in the spring. We knew he made some contacts there on the exhibition grounds, and so we thought it might be a good idea to bring in our Canadian friends.
Good man, Roberts.
Yes, rather. He figured Vlaster was steering Broom in the direction of Salome.
So did I, as a matter of fact.
Don't be petulant, Gray. It just so happened that Roberts was faster on his feet and got into the act before Broom could make his move. But we did make one mistake.
Yes?
We figured Broom was taking a message to Belgrade. Instead, he was the courier who was bringing a message from Belgrade.
It was a pretty public drop.
Well, you know what they say about pebbles on the beach, Gray. Anyway, when we did decode the message, which, as you know by now, was hidden in the fringes of the seventh veil, We found that it did indeed concern Canadian security.
Yes, yes, I know about the veil, of course, but I still don't know about Roberts. The last time I saw him, he was not more than 2 inches away from a lovely girl who wore nothing but a thin veil.
All you have to do is to think on your feet next time, like Roberts. Of course, he's a much younger man, Gray.
Yes, I see.
But let me continue. Roberts left the dance floor during the blackout and escaped from the Metropole Bar via the artists' dressing rooms. One of the jugglers, an operative of ours, led the way.
I see. Sorry about Broom.
That's all right, Gray. I wouldn't worry about him if I were you. It would have been extremely difficult to get him back to this country anyway. And after all, we got the veil.
Well, I took him to his room when we left the Metropole Bar. He was gone the next morning.
Did you expect him to solicit orders for the British book trade for the rest of the week in Belgrade? No, no, Gray. You did a splendid job once again. And after all, who are we to begrudge a Mountie getting his veil?
Double Strip by Otto Lowy. The part of John Gray was played by Edward Greenhalgh. Ramsey by Sam Payne. George Broom by John White. Ken Roberts by Terence Kelly. And Vlasta by Eva Maria Terran. Mystery Theater was produced this week in the Vancouver studios of the CBC, with sound effects by Lars Eastholm and technical operations by Gene Lovrock. Direction Don Mowat.